You're listening to The Quarterdeck with Benjamin Strong and Coast Guard Admiral Jim Watson.
Hi, it's Ben Strong from Amber.com. Welcome back to another edition of The Quarterdeck. I'm joined by my co-host, Admiral Jim Watson. Admiral Watson, how are you, sir?
Just fine, Ben. It's good to hear from you again.
Great to be with you, and it's good to be back sharing the things that we have with the maritime community. And we're recording just a few days after shipping 2011, the Connecticut Maritime Association's North American Shipping Conference. Again, over 2,000 people in attendance. Coast Guard Admiral Cook was on hand. Certainly the Commandant was there to speak at the Plimsoll Award luncheon, a host of other Coasties. And then, as you know, Admiral Watson, from attending in the past, pretty much anybody who is anybody in shipping attends CMA.
That's a great event, Ben. I'm real glad that you were there. I understand you had some great conversations with people in the industry. And my colleague, Admiral Cook, I think really addressed the piracy issues and some of the other issues that are affecting the industry. So I'm interested in what your takeaways were.
Well, I would have to say if there was a dominant theme at CMA this year, it was definitely a piracy issue. And there was a significant presentation on piracy. Admiral Cook was on a panel with that. Mr. Douglas Stevenson from the Seamen's Church Institute was on that panel. And Clay Maitland from the Marshall Islands Registry was there as well. And, you know, a lot of times I think people, there's a misconception perhaps that as the United States Coast Guard, that we limit our sphere of responsibility to our coast. And that's not necessarily the case, particularly as it relates to piracy, is it, Admiral?
Not at all. I mean, our wake-up call was the Maersk Alabama case, which, of course, involved a U.S. flag vessel with U.S. merchant mariners on there. But we are interested in piracy just because it is an international crime. It definitely affects all of us who depend on maritime transportation system. You know, our economy is very dependent on international trade, most of which goes on ships. So we're dealing with the situation in Somalia right now, which happens to be a very highly trafficked area in the global marine transportation system. So the United States is taking actions, and the Coast Guard in particular, I think, has stepped out since right after the Maersk Alabama case with a modifications to maritime security directives that were in place for shipboard security measures, as well as engagement with other agencies in the federal government, as well as our activities at IMO and with international shipping associations.
Thank you, and it's good timing that Admiral Cook was able to present at CMA, because just a few days or a week prior, he gave testimony about piracy as well. And thank you for mentioning the maritime security directives, because if I recall correctly, and if I can preface this by reminding our listeners, while AMVR is certainly just a search and rescue system, the folks that we reach out to and that we touch is the commercial maritime sector. And so I would say piracy and the ability to be found at sea are probably equally as important. So if you're listening and you think, gosh, why is the Coast Guard AMVR program talking about piracy? Well, we certainly don't go out and hunt pirates, and we don't dabble in maritime security, but we recognize that our listeners, that the merchant fleets, the crews that are out there, are equally as affected by piracy as any other maritime disaster. So that's why we're taking some time today to talk about piracy, which really is dominating, you know, the front page of the maritime newspapers, shucks, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. But the maritime security directives, Admiral, and you had a hand in crafting some of those, really go back to 2006, but have been revised in order to deal with the, like you said, the Maersk Alabama incident and incidents that may that may arise today.
Yeah, Ben, just to give you a little history, the maritime security directives are a tool that became a useful item after the passage of the Maritime Transportation Security Act in I think 2003-2004 timeframe, and it was recognized that there are high risk waters even before the recent really scourge of piracy in the Indian Ocean and Gulf of Aden region. Mariners have unfortunately had crimes against them and activities that range from piracy to just armed robbery and theft in a lot of areas of the world. The 2006 version of the MARSEC directive, which is a security sensitive document, by the way, that would just provides guidelines for shipboard security officers in securing the safety of the crew on board a U.S. flagged ship. It addressed typical crime prevention things that you could do aboard ship. You know, lighting, access control at the brow, basically knowing where these high-risk waters are and taking extra precautions with extra watches. When the Maersk Alabama incident occurred, we realized that this really upped the ante. You're talking about armed pirates, people that are firing RPG weapons at the ship, coming aboard with the intent of actually taking the crew as hostage and bringing the ship into a Somali port. We revised that MARSEC directive with some specific guidelines for those high-risk waters in the vicinity of Somalia and the Indian Ocean there south of Oman. And north of Madagascar. It did include a controversial provision that security guards would be required. It did not specify that they needed to be armed, an armed security force. The intent was that we felt the situation there was more than you can expect the navigation crew, the normal crew, to deal with in terms of an extra, you know, providing the extra watch that would be needed to detect the pirates and then providing the means to thwart their attempts to get aboard. The document does require that U.S. flagships put a special plan together if they intend to transit those waters and have that plan approved by the Coast Guard Marine Safety Center. Providing armed guards is one way to meet that requirement. There are a number of ways, and there's been some real innovative ways to, as I said, detect and deter a piracy event. And there's no have to do things other than to submit a plan and convince the Marine Safety Center that it meets the overall objectives of defending a ship against pirates.
It sounds like it's a pretty comprehensive document, but not the only document that's available to mariners. As you said, this is and we talked a little bit before the show, but we discussed this is kind of just one node or one point, one resource that's available specifically to ship security officers. But there are a host of other things that the Coast Guard has done in relation to piracy, including the taking the lead in the forming of a piracy action team, providing port security advisories. You mentioned PSAs, port security advisories. And for the things that we're able to, we'll provide a link in the show notes to these resources and documents that we have available either through the Coast Guard or through the Maritime Administration. But Admiral, I want to touch on one thing that you mentioned, and that was the use of armed guards, because if there was a controversial point at CMA, it was certainly the debate on using armed guards on vessels to combat piracy. And it was Giles Noakes from BIMCO that really came out criticizing that and encouraged the implementation of the best management practices that are both under development. And as I mentioned, some of those practices are available on the Maritime Administration's website, which we'll, again, include in the show notes. But the Piracy Action Team, that's not just the Coast Guard, is it, Admiral?
Absolutely not. The Coast Guard is a participant in an interagency piracy action team. It also includes the Department of State, the Secretary's Office of in the Defense Department, the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the U.S. Department of Defense, the Department of Transportation, specifically Merit Administration, the Office of Naval Intelligence, Department of Commerce, Department of Justice, the U.S. Military Sealift Command, and some other agencies that are bringing to the table not only their expertise and interest in defending ships, maintaining the safety at sea in the high-risk waters, but also providing information. How can we help captains at sea by providing them as much information as we can through not just U.S. means, but through international means, so that they can route around high-risk piracy areas or speed up or go at the right time of the year. There's definitely a difference when you go through those waters in the Indian Ocean in the winter versus in the summer and so on, and also night and day.
Well, and the we should mention most people, at least the folks in the maritime community, in fact, I would say probably everybody would really saw how piracy hit home when, sadly, we had several American yachtsmen that were murdered by Somali pirates, despite efforts of rescue crews to try to get them. And these advisories and that were perhaps geared for the commercial maritime fleet now include warnings to commercial. Not commercial mariners, but also folks that may just be pleasure yachters and pleasure cruisers going through that particular area.
That's right. There's been just general notice to mariners that has been disseminated. And we work very closely with the U.S. Maritime Administration to get that word out. That was a tragic incident, and it unfortunately occurred not during the original piracy attempt, but actually, like you said, during the rescue attempt. And, I think that points to the fact that it's much better to deter the pirates or to defend your ship against them if they're trying to board the vessel. It's much, much better in this situation to have a good defense than to depend on a rescue.
Sure.
There's been very low success, actually, in recovering hostages from these ships, other than to pay the ransom. And yet we've had really high success when best management practices are used. And actually, for these ships that are actually hiring armed security guards for making that transit, there's been 100% success in not being pirated.
Well, and for the recreational boater that may be listening, because we do have people in the recreational boating community that are interested in AMVR, a best practice might simply be to avoid those waters altogether. If they you know, three or four or five people on a pleasure craft are probably no match for the firepower and the tenacity that these pirates are demonstrating, and that follows in line with the notice to mariners that went out, that it's probably best for them to avoid these waters altogether.
Yeah, that's what the notice said. So that's really what we're advising, and the same might even apply to smaller commercial vessels. If you have what we call a low freeboard and you're making slow speeds, you become a very easy target, unfortunately, in those waters.
Well, and unfortunately, I don't think these incidents of pirate attacks will be going down anytime soon. So, as information changes and as best practices continue to develop, I would encourage mariners to look towards either the Coast Guard or the Maritime Administration or any number of international maritime safety organizations for what those practices are. The pirates seem adept at changing their tactics, and it's our responsibility to change our safety practices as the situation evolves. And it all boils down to safety at sea, and that's what AMVR is about, and those are the aims that we have, is to keep our maritime partners safe.
Well, I think it's very commendable that you have actually broadened out, despite your focus obviously being to rescue mariners who are involved with purely a safety of life issue, due to typically weather conditions or something happening to the ship itself. In the United States, I think we're the U.S. Coast Guard are encouraged that we're being supported by the U.S. Congress with legislation, and in the international maritime by the UN resolutions. And so I think that, you know, we're motivated and dedicated to trying to reduce the loss of ships to piracy and the hostage taking that's been going on. Unfortunately, I think we still have a long way before we can turn the corner, despite all of the naval ships patrolling that area, and for a large part, compliance with best management practices by international shipping and with the Maritime Security Directive for the U.S. shipping. So we're just going to have to keep working this as a team, and I think it is an issue that AMVR in particular can continue to help with.
Well, we're happy to share the message, whether it be on our blog or through a podcast like this. I know the U.S. Coast Guard shares its message through its blog and its other ways of distributing the message. And actually, I think that's probably a good segue, because one of the other topics that came up at CMA was the message, and how do shipping companies and others share their message, and one of those is through social media, and this podcast is a tool in that social sphere. And social media for shipping was one panel discussion that was given by MTI, and I actually took some time to talk with Brett Kyle from the Maritime Executive, who really kind of branched out using LinkedIn, which is a tool for any type of professional, but specifically he created a group within LinkedIn, which is kind of, for lack of a better term, a Facebook for professionals. But he created the Maritime Executive Group in LinkedIn for maritime professionals to share some of their thoughts, things that they may be promoting, talk about issues such as the Jones Act or piracy or social media. And if we can take a break for a minute, I'm going to share an interview, a short interview I did with Brett. And when we come back, we'll talk perhaps a little bit about social media in the shipping community, and then some of the things that we're looking at for the future. So we'll take a short break. share this interview with Brett Kyle that we did at CMA Shipping 2011, and Admiral Watson and I will be back with our take on social media and shipping.
Hi, it's Ben Strong from Amver.com, and I'm joined now by Brett Kyle, who's here at CMA Shipping 2011. We're going to talk a little bit about social media in shipping. How are you doing, Brett?
I'm doing great. Good to see you, Ben.
Good to see you as well. And while you're probably best known, well, maybe not best known for your work with the Maritime Executive Magazine, one of your social media efforts is the Maritime Executive Group on LinkedIn, and you've become pretty proficient with social media. Tell me a little bit about your social media group that you have.
Well, we started back in 2007. It was an effort to build our circulation. We were short-staffed, a new company, just launched a magazine in tough times, and we didn't have the wherewithal to hire somebody to find a bunch of new people to read our magazine. So, and also, the LinkedIn site had just begun. So I saw a lot of people I know, not in the maritime industry, utilizing this site, a lot of graduate students, professionals using it to network. So I thought, what a great way to get in front of my clientele. So I randomly started searching, saw a handful of my clients and people that we've written about on the covers, invited them to connect. They were open to connecting, and it gave me the idea to start a group. Why not, protect our name, form a group where we can have viable discussions, people can discuss articles. I mean, good for branding for us, but really just to get the word out for what's going on in the maritime community and build our circulation. And it's been strong.
That's great. And for the folks who may not know what LinkedIn is an internet clearinghouse is probably the wrong word.
It's like a Facebook for business,
Exactly. Facebook for business. And
No picture. There's a picture of yourself, but you don't post pictures of vacations or anything like that. You could do a slideshow, but that's far-reaching. It's mainly just a way to get in front of people quickly. People know who you're dealing with.
And the Maritime Executive Group that you put together isn't just... it's not just for subscribers of Maritime Executive Magazine. You've got how many people do you have in the group now?
Close to 12,000.
Amazing.
11, I haven't checked in a few weeks, but we get on average about 30 a day showing up. Sometimes more. Sometimes up to about 50. Like when we publish an article about LinkedIn, then we'll get a big spike.
Mm-hmm.
But usually it's about 30 on average. So it's been just slow and steady for the last 4 years.
And are these U.S. readers or are these
more
folks
and more
from...
foreign? In the old days, back in 2007, 2008.
Social media, that is the old days, isn't it?
Yeah. Being that America is pretty much, all these companies are American companies, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. It took off here first. Now I see it picking up a lot of steam in Europe. Asia's still a little more reluctant, the Middle East, but they're on there. There's a lot of people. We run into problems with social media in the Far East because they don't allow Facebook as one. Twitter, with the recent events in Yemen and Egypt, a lot of these countries are cracking down on Twitter feeds, but LinkedIn's still going strong.
That's great. And now have you found, because I know that Maritime Executive has its own Twitter account, would you say that your LinkedIn group is probably one of the more powerful maritime social media groups out there? I mean, with 12,000 people, it's bound to be.
There's two top ones. There's the Maritime Group, which is set up by a guy named Gaspar. His is a myriad of pleasure craft and commercials. Mm-hmm. So he comes from a yachting background.
Mm-hmm.
And he started a few months before I started. So he's always, it's funny, we both kind of grow organically the same way. He's always about 500 to 1,000 ahead of us, and it's the same reasons. I mean, we're not really soliciting it, we just take the people that come in.
Sure.
But he has a lot of yachting and boating-oriented articles, so it opens up a whole other audience.
Interesting. Now, we were talking a little bit beforehand, but what would you say is the most interesting or controversial, because it's not just a network of people, but you have... people can post topics, questions, stories, anything kind of maritime related. But what would you say is the most viral thing that you've got on the maritime?
There are two that are hot. Yeah. One's the Jones Act. Anytime you mention the word Jones Act, everybody's got an opinion. Good, bad, and different. Everybody likes to chime in on that. A gentleman named Lance Lemkuhl from Horizon Shipbuilding, a U.S. shipyard, posted that we should end the Jones Act. So that was very ironic to have somebody like that small shipyard in the Gulf of Mexico posting that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can only imagine the response that came out of that. Another recent one that's been going viral, last time I checked, he had about 400 comments.
Wow, 400 comments.
The recent one that's got over 100 comments, that was just posted a week or so ago, had to do with shooting pirates. A lot of mariners and even ship owners, just shoot these pirates. Let's just kill them. And other people are saying, that's not right. there's human rights, there's more involved in this than the pirates, and so that's gone very viral.
But it's certainly a forum to pose the debate and then for people to weigh in one way or another.
Definitely, and you get all walks of life. I mean, the upper echelon, the royalty of shipping down
right.
to...
Sure.
Down to people sailing, and they're actually dealing with these issues.
Oh, that's great. So it's really, so you found that social media has been good for you. How would you say social media is being embraced by the entire maritime sector?
Well, some are, the older generation, they're skeptical on it, you know, just like online banking and everything else.
Sure.
A lot of magazines are not active on it because it's too transparent for them. It threatens them because that's their whole shtick, shall I say. You know,
sure.
That's their audience they don't want to reveal. We look at it a different way. Like, if we're transparent, I mean, we see all these people at trade shows anyway.
Right.
There's no reason to hide that. The beauty of it is we can show all the people that don't go to trade shows that read our magazine. And that's our target reader, the fleet superintendent in a foreign country, a guy working in Romania that's from Germany, or a Norwegian expat in Brazil, or a U.S. guy working on a pipeline in Alaska. Those are the kinds of people we want to target, and they spend the most time on social media.
Right, right.
They're held up in their hotel room or on the cabin of a boat. They have nothing to do with their time other than reach out to their family and then go on these kinds of sites.
Sure, sure. Well, it's good that you've got that breadth of the maritime sector, from either owner down to able-bodied seaman or deckhand, and with 12,000 and growing, you've certainly got a corner on the social media market. Brett, I want to thank you very much for taking some time with us, and I'll include a link in the show notes, so if people want to check out the Maritime Executive Group on LinkedIn, they can join LinkedIn and take a look at that.
Great, I appreciate that. Thanks again,
Brett.
And we're back after a short interview with Brett Kyle in the Maritime Executive Group, and it's interesting that his particular group, Admiral, on LinkedIn, he's got 12,000 members that either are what we call lurking or listening and watching or contributing, and he said the most discussed topic was the Jones Act, but... I don't think social media and shipping is going to go away. What are your thoughts? Do you think you'll see more shipping companies entering the social media world?
Oh, I think that's occurring across the world in general. So I would be very surprised if the marine industry, the maritime community, were to avoid it. It's almost unavoidable. It's the way to get your news. It's the way to be a part of policy making and influencing policymakers. I think it's wonderful that you have 2,000 people come to something like the conference in Connecticut that CMA hosts. But heck, if you've got 12,000 people that are involved just with one site there on LinkedIn, that's many, many more people that can enjoy the same sort of access to the same kinds of people, which I think is what it's all about.
It's interesting. I know that the Sea Trade Organization and they do a cruise shipping exhibition down in Miami just recently started a virtual trade show for the cruise industry. So the mega yacht and cruise industry has recognized that perhaps, looking at the economy the way it is and travel budgets and things, that there are tools available to reach out to customers and constituents and either get opinions or share information. And they actually run, I believe they're now in their second year of a virtual trade show. And I would suspect that as the technology improves, and it does so quickly, that even government's outreach as we're doing here with the podcast, our interaction with the maritime community will continue to evolve in the social space.
I think it definitely will. And we have so few flag officers, for example, in the U.S. Coast Guard. Other agencies have really very few people that are spread very, very thin that represent these agencies or executive bodies in industry or in government, that they can't be every place all the time. And so here's an opportunity to use technology let people understand that there's this great desire to have a dialogue. There's a great desire for us to be seen as people, as opposed to buildings or pieces of paper. And I think that this is a great way to go about doing it.
That's a good point. And as we mentioned in our first podcast, and I'll reiterate here, this the way that we share information with all of you is not meant to just be Admiral Watson and I having a pleasant conversation amongst ourselves. Certainly, if there's something that you, the listener or the reader or somebody who's out in the maritime community wants us to discuss, or if you've got a question for us, we know sometimes it takes a while to build an audience, but just leave your question or your suggestion in the comments section, and Admiral Watson and I will look at that, and we'll see if we can answer it or if we can expand on a particular topic you'd like us to cover. A lot of things are coming up in the future. I'll be at the Arctic Shipping Summit in Helsinki in April, and hope to be able to bring some things back about the environment and Arctic shipping and the role that Amver can play in Arctic shipping and bring that back. May will bring Norse shipping, and we'll have an Amver Award ceremony in Oslo, Norway, and I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to both interview people and learn what's on the minds of the maritime sector. Admiral Watson, any changes coming up or travels with you or forums that you may be participating in?
Well, I'll be up in New York for the New York Marine Society in a couple of weeks. I'm actually going up to the Great Lakes this week and looking forward to that. That's with the Coast Guard Auxiliary and out on a ice-breaking buoy tender up there. But then down the road a little bit in April, mid-April, I'll be at the Cruise Line International Association. I think that's going to be down in Broward County and near Fort Lauderdale. So I try to get around, and I certainly look forward to doing more podcasts in between.
Well, if any of you are going to be either in Helsinki or Tampa or the Great Lakes or anywhere that Admiral Watson and I will be traveling, we invite you to come up and say hello to us. Let us know your thoughts either in person or in the comments section of the podcast, and reach out to us, because that's what we're here for, to share the maritime safety, search and rescue, Amver, and Coast Guard story with you. Admiral Watson, if I don't see you on the road or see you beforehand, I look forward to connecting with you again and having another discussion, and hopefully we'll have some input from the field. But in the meantime, we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, Ben, you take care.
You have been listening to The Quarterdeck. Learn more about the Amber program at amber.com. The Quarterdeck theme song is called Botany Bay by The Blackguards. Available at musicalley.com, or follow the link in our show notes.
I'm on the way down to the quay, where the good ship and anchor lays. To command the gang of navvies, they told me to engage. Well, I thought I'd stop for a pint before I went away. But I take a trip on an emigrant ship to the shores of Botany Bay.